out the sports takes in the afternoon. Rob Kerr is only on Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
They're playing good football. They've had the luxury of playing against two very, very young quarterbacks, and we can't overlook that. But regardless, I mean, they get paid to play. Our players get paid to play and to focus and play good defense, and that's what they've been playing.
Sure get the sense from John Huffnagel that he has no misgivings about what and who his 3-0 football club is. Wow. 10-7 over the Hamilton Tiger Cats on Friday night. It's a popular culture refrain, a popular culture question that gets asked all the time. I believe it comes from the movie Gladiator. Were you not entertained? Oh my gosh. Struggling to keep your eyes open on that one. Even the Ottawa Redblacks, who won in their home debut, their brand new field, they beat the Argonauts, but even that one was left without excitement. The clip from John Huffnagel's talking about his defense, and his defense has been excellent. Surrendered one whole touchdown this year. You can make a case that that one whole touchdown, which came in the final seconds of that beatdown of Montreal in week one at McMahon, really meant nothing. Bend and not break. Bo Levi Mitchell. Stayed in the entire game against the Hamilton Tiger Cats. And I know that Bruce talked about that in the previous hour, and I do want to bring him into that conversation. I think that was significant. I think that was important. And I'm not suggesting that he was struggling. I think this is one of those cases, as John Huffnagel was talking about his defense, I think you have to give credit on the other side. I think Ken Austin's defense for Hamilton was excellent. I think this was one of those days where it certainly looked like the Stampeders were missing John Cornish. They were missing that game breaker. They were missing that big play specialist. Now, they did get one from Brad Sinopoli, guest of the program last week, not that I'm keeping track, but Brad Sinopoli with the play of the week, scrambling in, kind of a broken play. Talked to Bo Levi Mitchell about it today, and I suppose I'm guilty of thinking of it as some sort of razzle-dazzle play. He said, no, everybody's got that play. It's no big deal. Nothing fancy, nothing to see there. But Sinopoli giving the Stampeders the major that they would need. 10-7 is your final. Calgary now 3-0. It's the first time the Calgary Stampeders have been 3-0 in a season since 2000. That one just boggles my mind. There have been some, yeah, the early part of the 2000s and the 02, 03, 04, in that era, those weren't good football clubs. But there have been some very good football teams under Tom Higgins and under John Huffnagel here, but have not jumped out to that 3-0 start in this season. That's the case for Calgary. I think part of it in the past has been that stampede break that's forced them to go play two on the road, usually in Toronto and Hamilton. But right now the CFL trying to weight the schedule with more divisional matchups in the later stages of the season. So we've been really fed a healthy dose of West versus East. The Stampeders have taken advantage. The Eskimos have taken advantage. And the Battle of Alberta looms on Thursday. A lot of people talking about this one. A lot of people are looking at this and that old head scratching. Now, there have been good Stampeder Eskimo football games. I think that's where we have to differentiate here. I think in the last decade or so, there's a handful of very competitive games. But more often than not, they featured a team with, you know, a much better record than the other team. And they were not supposed to be close games, but they turned out to be close games. This is the first time the Battle of Alberta has been fought in an awful long time with two teams firing on all cylinders. And I don't care what the sport is. I guess in the case of the Roughnecks and the Rush in the NLL, yeah, they met in the postseason. So, you know, you have it in National Lacrosse League action. Certainly in the NHL, we had a possibility of this back in 2006. But that got wiped out. The two teams never met. Calgary bowing out in the first round to Anaheim, and Edmonton would go on to lose to Carolina in the Stanley Cup final. There was a possibility of those two teams meeting in the postseason. This is not a postseason matchup, obviously. This is an early season matchup. But as far back as many of us can remember, it's the first time you have the Eskimos and the Stampeders on similar paths, in the same predicament. The Eskimos, by virtue of playing one more game, 4-0, they're tops in the West. Calgary trailing at 3-0. I would suggest that it's easy to look at the Eskimos' win last week in Winnipeg, 26-3. Far more impressive, probably the most impressive game of the week until Saturday when the BC Lions blew out the Montreal Alouettes. It's been a tough week for entertainment. Tough week in the CFL. Penalty flags continue to fly. Tomorrow we'll be recording a conversation with Glenn Johnson, the new head of officiating in the CFL. Talk to him about some of the rule changes and talk to him about some of what we've seen so far this season. If you are one of those people that goes, you know, it has to be, they have to be calling more penalties. Absolutely. In 2013, there was an average of 18.4 flags thrown a game. So far this year, 24.3. 14.2% of the plays that have been run in the CFL have resulted in a flag. And I think the CFL is trying to change some on-field behavior. I think the CFL is trying to put some safety protocols in. And while we all agree in the offseason, coaches, players, media, and fans alike, it's awesome. This is what we need to do. Once the games are meaningful, once the points are on the line, there is little patience for crackdowns. Just let them play. I can't believe they're calling that. Talk to Glenn Johnson about that tomorrow. So obviously this week is going to have a real heavy CFL bent. And here's hoping Thursday night's matchup up at Commonwealth lives up to the hype. Because right now, Mark Cohan's league could use a little hype. It has not been a banner start to the CFL season. The most outstanding player from last year remains sidelined, didn't finish the first game. No sign of John Cornish today. No sign of Keon Raymond today at practice, so those two likely not going to play against Edmonton. Friend of the program and a sure bet Hall of Famer. Do you put long snappers in the Hall of Fame? I believe you do. Randy Chevrier, also not participating in practice, but had a chance to talk to him. He thinks he's going to be ready to go up in Edmonton. Mayo's back. That's a big bonus. But other than that, you know, again, it continues to be significant injuries. Nick Lewis practicing today, so he'll go. Already no Mo Price. So we'll watch with great interest what happens in the next couple of days. Short week for the Stampeders. They had a rare practice last night, practiced again today. They'll practice tomorrow before their walkthrough in Edmonton on Wednesday. The Eskimos did play last Thursday, so it's a regular work week for them. But this should be a lot of fun. This should be really, to me, the one thing this represents is an opportunity for us to get that rivalry going again. North versus South, the Battle of Alberta. You have it. Certain degrees in the Western Hockey League with more teams, you have all kinds of battles. Talked about the NLL. But in the major two in this city, in the NHL and the CFL, it has been lacking. And I would say that significantly impacts the CFL team more than the NHL team. No doubt the Dome and Rexall Place and soon to be Rogers, whatever they're calling it in Edmonton, they will fill up when the Oilers and the Flames play. But you can see it in the CFL. Wasn't a great crowd. Certainly wasn't a great crowd on Friday. 27,000. Haven't even hit 30,000 yet. I don't believe for the Stampeders. 26,135. The opening game against Montreal. So up about 1,000. 1,400. Hopefully, little Battle of Alberta will get the juices flowing. Just seemed a little odd the last couple of Labor Days. You go to McMahon Stadium and there used to be lines and lines of buses from Edmonton coming down for that game. It hasn't quite been the same. But boy, if this one lives up to the hype on Thursday and you can build a little juice heading into the Labor Day home and home, it'll be good. Be good for the local teams, it'll be good for the league. CFL really kind of looking for a little bit of something. We'll talk to Bruce about that as well. Some other things going on. Rory McIlroy winning the Open. I know Bruce touched on this. Tiger falling off. Was not a great finish at all for Tiger. Golf needs him. Although McIlroy now with his third major. And how about his dad? How about his dad cashing in? Dad showing a little faith in old Rory. Takes the bet that, you know, he would win a British Open. I think it was in 5 years or something like that. Anyway, he cashed in on that ticket. So now the golfing world shifts its attention to Canada. The Canadian Open, as once was referred to as the unofficial other major. Not sure if that still applies, but a big deal in our country. And the other thing we will be touching on today, later on in the 5 o'clock hour, a couple of hockey guests. Helene St. James from Detroit Free Press. Have you been paying attention to the Red Wings this summer? It has been far from what you would call a positive summer for the Detroit Red Wings, at least in the eyes of their fans and their media. Unable to attract any major free agents. You have Daniel Cleary coming back, and that seems to be somewhat of a firestorm. You have Mike Babcock, somewhat adversarial in the local media last week, having to answer questions about whether or not he was the reason major free agents wouldn't come to Detroit. This past weekend, they leaked plans or sent out plans of what the new building might look, and they're starting to talk about a 2017 date to start playing in Detroit. That's significant. The Detroit Red Wings look like, at least from the outside, like they're taking a little bit of a hit. Like, maybe the mystique is rubbing off. Maybe, just maybe, the Emperor's not wearing any clothes. We'll talk to Helene about that. She's been around that team for an awful long time, has a really good feel on it. Chris Johnson will join us from Sportsnet. You know him as one of our hockey gurus. Arbitration season is underway. We had a couple of our first cases today, or at least scheduled today. Sobotka, Vladimir, this one's intriguing to me. He's not even in the NHL this year. He's already signed to go over to the KHL. He was awarded a one-year contract today. What is interesting, and we'll get Johnson to explain it, at least I find it interesting, had he not filed for arbitration and just walked away, played in the KHL, Chris Johnson reporting today that Sobotka would have come back as a UFA. Could have come back to the NHL next year as a UFA, but he remains property of the St. Louis Blues thanks to the award today. And Cody Franson signing a one-year, $3.3 million deal. Says he wants to stay in Toronto. It's another guy whose name is out there. We might even touch on that a little because I understand. Our good friend Elliot Friedman was on a Toronto radio station and kind of indicated the local hockey heroes might be a team that would be interested in Cody Franson. I think there's a lot of teams that would likely be interested in Cody Franson. I believe Cody Franson was the player that the Toronto Maple Leafs were dangling to the Montreal Canadiens for Josh Georges. Georges, of course, wouldn't waive his no-trade clause to go to Toronto. So we'll talk to Chris Johnson about that, talk about some of the other UFA cases. And again, the one that I think we're all counting down the minutes to, the one that I think everybody is waiting on, will be the Ryan O'Reilly arbitration case. Again, those players do not appear to be, or that the players in that, the team, the Colorado Avalanche, and Ryan O'Reilly, not even close. And I think there's a lot of that that still hangs and hinges on the fact that the Flames made that offer sheet and the Avalanche matched it. I just think the Flames might have priced him out of Colorado. And that one looks like it's coming to a head. Lots of arbitration. And by the way, Joe Colborn of the Calgary Flames scheduled to go to arbitration here, I think, next week. Don't think they want to get there. I really don't. I believe that. And that's the case in most of these. I'm not sure that, you know, a lot of these are going to go to arb. Interesting one scheduled for tomorrow, Sam Gagner, who was with the Edmonton Oilers, now with the Phoenix Coyotes. You know what? No, he's not. As I'm looking at my list, this is a list of 2013 arbitration dates. Ladies and gentlemen, I have lied to you. I have bold-faced lied to you. As I put all of my faith in this piece of paper, and this piece of paper was wrong. Sam Gagner, just as soon as I said that, that doesn't make any sense. Sam Gagner does not have arb. We do know Joe Colburn does. We knew Ryan O'Reilly does, and there's some other ones. We'll talk to Chris Johnson about that. So, obviously, a lot going on. Some baseball news as we head into the last half of the season after the All-Star break. The Jays winning a couple over the weekend, start a tough series against the Boston Red Sox. So a lot of CFL talk for you today, a little bit of hockey talk in the 5 o'clock hour, and we're also going to squeeze some golf talk in there with Bruce Dobing. And a lot going on here at Sportsnet 960 The Fan. And a reminder, Ryan Pinder will be live from the Hockey Alberta Foundation Charity Golf Classic next Tuesday at the Stewart Creek Golf and Country Club in Canmore. Funds raised go to the Every Kid, Every Community Fund, which supports hockey programs for kids in Alberta. For more information, visit hockeyalberta.ca. When we come back, Mr. Dobigan will rejoin us. A lot to do this afternoon. Sportsnet 960, The Fan.
Proud to broadcast from Calgary, Alberta, Canada. Sportsnet 960, The Fan. Talking sports in the afternoon. This is the Big Show on Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
Meanwhile, Arizona Coyote fans are jumping out of their skin. What do you mean Sam Gagner is going to arbitration on July 22nd? Well, that was last year's news as a member of the Oilers. The actual list of players going to arbitration here in the next few days. Antoine Roussel from Dallas tomorrow. Jason Demers from San Jose. Ryan O'Reilly and Chris Kreider. And I think, double check me on that one, but didn't Demers already sign? I believe on...
May have.
He did. So, yes. The big one is Ryan O'Reilly, which comes up on Wednesday.
It'd be kind of neat if one of these actually went to arbitration again. Like in the old days where they accused you of too much. Remember in the old days, you go in there and they'd say, well, you drink too much. And you stayed out late a couple of times.
Now they're not allowed to do that.
No, apparently.
No.
But they're not as much fun.
No, that way they're not.
No.
But it's not a fun process to go in and listen to the member club tell the arbitrator how bad you are and how they're just, they don't even know why they're here. Why are we even bothering offering this guy a deal?
Tough love.
Right?
They give you the tough love thing.
Cody Franson deciding. The other one that's interesting, and I don't want to bog down on this, we'll talk about it later on, but the fact that Sobotka wasn't even there today. They just got an award, $1.4 million. But interesting note that Chris Johnson said, had he not filed for arbitration, he could have gone to the KHL and been a UFA next year.
There you go.
So,
I'd like to get a job where I don't show up and I get $1.4 million.
It's good line of work if you can get it.
Apparently, yeah. I just don't know what that line of work is yet.
I heard you talking about this, and I certainly went off on this. 10-7, the Stampeders over the Hamilton Tiger Cats on Friday. At the end of the year, they say how many, not how.
No pictures on the scoreboard.
Ay, ay, ay.
Yeah.
Ay, ay, ay.
And but it's a typical CFL game in the early season. And, I have no reason to say this other than my own instinct, but it's like there's a hangover from the labor thing earlier in the year. That a lot of guys went into camp pissed this year.
Yeah.
Upset.
Sure.
Not happy. And I see a lot of ill discipline. I see a lot of poor fundamentals. I see a lot of stuff where guys don't look like their heads are into it. And I naturally have to ask, have they brought these guys back? Have they got these guys' heads where they should be?
It's an interesting point you raise because
I'm here for.
On the surface, very heated, it gets done, not everybody's happy, and then it all seems to go away, at least publicly. Nobody's talking about it, coaches don't reference it, players don't reference it. But the question was asked, what would the long-term ramification be of it? And I know Vicki Hall made the point with us that she wondered if on a team that already had a little bit of an issue in the locker room, if that could create somewhat of a chasm, if we could see teams that just never got on the same page because of that. And now to have you bring it up, Bruce, I think it's absolutely, I think it's a possibility.
Vicki wasn't suggesting there's a problem in the Calgary room.
Not at all. No.
She's talking hypothetically.
She's talking hypothetically. Okay. My point to her at the time was, okay, this is done. Now what? Are we still talking about this in a month? Are we still dealing with this? Where does it show, where does it rear its ugly head?
Because there were different... as opposed to, let's say, the hockey or the NFL unions, they're kind of different factions in the CFL Players Association. There's the American guys.
Yep.
There's the Canadian guys here for a long time.
Yep.
There's the few stars that get paid, let's say, 500 large. And you know, some of them got what they wanted, but certainly a lot of them didn't get what they wanted.
Oh, I agree.
I think the American guys got that cash up front. Who cares about 2 years from now? I'm here, I'm gone. I know the Canadian guys are probably looking at five-year careers and thinking, where are we going to be in 5 years?
Yep.
And how is that knitting in a lot of dressing rooms? I don't know. I don't know.
Well,
teams look unhappy, and Andre Preux looks like busy.
Well, and you mentioned the penalties. I was talking about it earlier. The fact that if you thought you were seeing more flags, you were not far off. So far this year, averaging 24.3 penalties per game. Last year was 18.4. In 2012, averaged 19.3. But the big one is you're seeing flags thrown on 14.2% of the plays, right?
So, and some of that is because they're trying to call the contact stuff more closely. I mean, apparently Dwight Anderson did not get the memo that you can't take a guy's head off at the neck, you know, just because you feel like it.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a few of those. They also are interpreting the hitting the quarterback. I've seen three times in which quarterbacks were grazed or not, you know, and Andre Preux with the flag,
yeah.
You know, and he has to be coached that, you know what, I know you're trying to protect the quarterbacks, but something else.
Well, it's funny you bring that up because
and then there's ill discipline.
We are going to be talking to Glenn Johnson, the new head of officiating, tomorrow.
Yeah.
This is the history on this particular interview is that May 2nd, he was in visiting the Stampeders coaches, and they made a media availability. So we went in, we sat in there, they talked about the emphasis this year, they talked about, you know, the PI review and everything, and did a fantastic job. And I said, boy, rather than scrumming this guy, I would like to talk to him one-on-one.
Yes.
Well, we're finally going to get him tomorrow.
Good.
Having said that, you will concur with me that in May, we're all on board.
Yeah.
Are you kidding me? Yeah, this is something we got to get out of the game. Yeah, we're in. The minute the bullets start flying and the points are for real.
How do you feel about the pass interference thing? Being able to
challenge it. I think it's a reach. I think it's a real reach.
That hasn't bothered me as much as I thought it was going to.
Oh, really?
When I saw them say it, I said, oh, man, you're opening up a can of worms here. That hasn't bothered me. Again, maybe because some of the other penalties are just so more annoying. Maybe when they get that cleaned up, we'll be more critical of this.
Yeah.
But I just feel on a few things, the CFL, on the contact of the quarterback and maybe on the PI, they're a couple of lengths ahead of the field at the moment. And whether they're going to finish this race in first place, I don't know.
Does the CFL have the luxury, Bruce, of working this out? You know,
they got to.
Or are they forced into making a change? Let's be perfectly honest. Everybody's talking about this, right?
I think that they're a little bit of a canary in a coal mine for the NFL on the pass interference thing. And listen, let's be honest. One of the top three most important owners in this league is Bob Wettenhall from Montreal.
Mm-hmm.
And the Montreal Alouettes were jobbed in the playoffs at the end of that game on a blatant pass interference that wasn't called. And to me, I think this is almost a direct extension of that.
Okay.
But on the other hand, we're getting to see something in practice so that the NFL, maybe college football in the States too, I don't know.
Right.
But so they can look at it and see how it works. And it hasn't bothered me as much as I thought it would.
Well, you know, my question...
Not as much as this chair sagging hand. Keep talking.
All right. No, you know what? My question really comes from the hockey world, that after the 04-05 lockout... there was a crackdown on obstruction. And
yes.
if you want, I can whip the numbers out for you right now. And I can tell you that, you know, the power play opportunities in 05-06 are more than two times what they were last year.
There's a book coming out this fall which talks extensively
about
it.
Does it?
Yes.
So I'm preaching.
And how it affected a particular NHL team.
I'm preaching to the choir.
But you're right. It literally went from about... almost eight, I think it was, seven, a high sevens, to about 3.8 power plays per game. Teams were getting that many, and then by 3 years later, yeah. And part of that was guys learned what not to do and how to interfere without interfering and, you know, that sort of stuff. But there was a conscious effort by the league to do that, and which they subsequently seem to have rejected. Sometime around the time the Boston Bruins won the Stanley Cup, I think the NHL decided that all that stuff was unnecessary.
Well, I mean, I can just talk to you from a Calgary Flames perspective. And
is this your resume that you hauled
No,
in?
This is my... This
it's
is
so
my,
long
this
and
is
extensive.
This is my giant sheet of stuff. But I can tell you that...
Yes, give us the exact numbers.
No, well, look, in 05-06, coming out of the lockout...
First year.
The Calgary Flames had 478 power play opportunities. They scored 87 power play goals, okay?
Yeah.
And had a power play percentage of 18.2%. I won't give you the lockout because I think the lockout one is skewed, but I'll give you 2011-2012, so not even this last season. The Calgary Flames had all of 260 power plays, had all of 46 power play goals, and had a power play percentage of 17.7%. So
it's half the offense is gone.
Right.
Half of the offense you got in that first year out is gone. Now,
right.
we weren't always pleased with the way they called the penalties in that first year out, but it seemed like the NHL was making a statement. And here's the blatant promotion, but I mean, for my book about Vancouver,
yeah.
what happened with them is they decided they were going to build their team around the new rules, and they were going to make their power play the instrument of change, etc. And that changed after 11, and they were left up the creek without the paddle. They were getting half the power plays, and even then they weren't scoring. So it was, you know, it was significant to a lot of teams, and to the teams that adjusted best, like Boston,
sure,
and maybe certainly the LA Kings. Maybe Anaheim, they're the ones who've succeeded. They've figured it out. They figured out how to make it work.
But I'll bring it all the
five
way
five on five.
But I'll bring it all the way back to the CFL. Is that what are we going through those kind of growing pains right now? I mean, in 2 or 3 years,
sample
from
size
now,
is kind of small. Still,
it is.
But
where I get the sense is kind of that same anger from people. Kind of that same resolve in the offseason. My God, we got to do something. We got to make it safer. You know, as you say, we had a bad example of PI, you know, influencing a postseason game. What can we do? So now you go through all of these changes, and we're only into week five.
Yeah.
But people are getting angry. I'm not sure this league has the ability to kind of weather a long-term. We need to fundamentally change the game, so those penalties are going to stay. That enforcement level is going to stay.
And this is their time of the year, Rob. They're unopposed. All they got is baseball.
Right.
The NFL camps haven't really gotten going, or the NFL games haven't
gotten
going. The hockey guys aren't going. This is when you're on ESPN. This is your chance to shine, and you look like poop. You really have not looked good. It's not been entertaining.
No.
And it's got to be an entertainment thing. And there's some other reasons which I'd point to right away. A bunch of new head coaches.
Yep.
We did the usual lotto assistant coach thing where, okay, Rich Stubler used to be there. Now you're here in Calgary.
Sure.
Jones is up in Edmonton, et cetera. So, and that doesn't always make it easy. But it's their time to make the impression to leave people feeling like they did. What was the thing about the World Cup of Soccer? Whether you like soccer or not. Man, there were some finishes. Man, you walked away from a bunch of games saying that was entertaining.
But you would also admit that there was more offense this World Cup.
Yes.
You know what I mean?
Well, and they want offense. People want to see scoring.
And so far, we haven't had offense in the CFL. We've had it in a couple of games against the Alouettes. But overall, and I made the case, you know, last week the big marquee matchup was the 3-0 Bombers and the 3-0 Eskimos.
It was a turkey.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then, you know, the Red Blacks open up at home, and that one, did that one even have a touchdown in it? I don't believe it did.
It fizzled.
10-7 at McMahon Stadium. By all accounts, that was a tough game. I mean, the
defenses are playing well.
Yes.
And I would not say that this is all necessarily the offense being inept.
Right.
I think there's a lot of good defensive play. But, yeah, in this city, you've got a quarterback who's trying to show that he can play.
Mm-hmm.
How many quarterbacks are there around the league? You got Ricky Ray.
Henry.
You got Henry, who's, you know, he's a vet, but he's, you know, he's not going to always knock your socks off.
Kevin Glenn.
Kevin Glenn.
How quickly do you get to Kevin Glenn, right?
Yeah.
How quickly do you get to Kevin Glenn?
And that, this is a coaches and quarterbacks league, and the coaches all played a little lottery thing this year, and the quarterbacks are not settled.
And, your point, I think, is well taken. I mean, it deserves to be asked.
Yes.
How much of this is a hangover from the labor? How much of this is, you know,
you talked to the guys afterwards.
Yes.
And you know there were guys, who, most of whom, of course, were in the bathroom when the votes were being taken because they were bored with it at the time and then realized they should have paid more attention. But they were not happy. They were not satisfied. No. They were grudgingly going back to camp. And that's a tough way to start your season. Hey, guys, forget about all that stuff. We love you again. I don't know.
That was one of the things that you watched as that played itself out. While they were in camp and while this was all going on, there seemed to be a really good job of, well, you know, we're practicing and we're preparing and things like that. But really, you know, how were you at the same level? Were you as engaged as they have been? And you know, it's an old Don Matthews line that, you know, two games is not enough of a preseason. Yeah. Six games is too much of a preseason. You really don't know what you have in the CFL till week four, week five.
Well, I'm sure, and because our audience is so astute and nothing gets by them, they're going to sit there and say, well, you two dummies are talking about this. Well, why didn't we have this kind of hangover from the NHL players coming back? And I would say to a large extent, I think would say that in the NHL, it's a Canadian thing. That Canadian guys, whatever happens, we're dutiful. We're loyal. We do our jobs. I think a lot of American guys who are here for the paycheck, that had an effect on the way they look at things.
But it is different.
They made them a lot more mercenary if they weren't already mercenary.
Sure, but the other thing is that the hockey players had it taken away, whatever you want, however you want to term it. So they were missing something. Hockey players are paid to play hockey. They weren't playing hockey, or they were over in Europe. It wasn't the NHL.
None of them named their children escrow after.
No, but football players still were, you know, they were still going through the motions. They were still doing this.
They got
this.
More money.
They did.
Got some benefits.
But I would just suggest that they were being pulled in different directions.
Yeah.
Whereas, you know, hockey players, okay, there's a finality to this. We haven't been playing. Now we are going to play. I wonder what it would be like if the CFL had missed four or five games.
Yeah,
you know, what would the football look like? Probably pretty scrambling.
Yeah, and listen, the league doesn't need this on top of the fact that the Hamilton Stadium isn't. This is two new stadia that haven't opened on time. The Winnipeg one missed by an entire season.
Right.
And now the Hamilton one, I talking to people in Hamilton, and it's a bare bones operation in terms of even when they get started. Concessions and a lot of those things will not be ready this season. They will be open in name alone.
Right.
So they're up at McMaster going to play this game. That's a black eye for the league. They have other things that they need to go right. They don't need to be adding to themselves by penalizing people every 3 seconds.
Well, you know, the league, you and I smile because you know where I'm coming from on this. There is something to be said there. When you can be critical of the league, there used to be a time when you could not be critical of the CFL because if you were critical of the CFL, you were just helping heap dirt on it and it was about to die. This is
certainly right, in the West.
This is right now a very. I think Mark Cohan's got a really interesting challenge in front of him, and I think it's the East. I really do. I think it's what you talked about.
Toronto has not been in a worse predicament. Now, you know, depending on who you listen to, Bob McCown has it dead and buried.
Yeah.
MLSE is out. It's finished.
Yeah.
Guy I talked to this weekend who should know says, no, still a chance, still possibility there. That has got to be resolved. They have got to keep a team in Toronto, put them in a small stadium, put them in the BMO field, get this thing done, and stop messing around. And that is the singular failure of Mark Cohan's career. Now, I know he can't invent money and all that sort of stuff, but Gary Bettman, God bless his pointed little cowlick,
right?
He gets situations solved eventually. Even the Phoenix one, Arizona, got solved.
That's a fine.
And Cohan he's still got one guy owning two teams, and that has got to end.
I don't disagree with
that
at
all. Looks terrible.
Well, and you know, I mentioned it last week.
There were tens of people at the Calgary game. Nobody there.
There were 16,000 announced. Okay. They gave Toronto the 100th Grey Cup. Let's be perfectly honest. That should have been a Prairie Grey Cup. That should have been in the heartland, Saskatchewan, Edmonton, Calgary, whatever, even BC.
It was a gift to Braley.
Right. They won that.
Yeah.
So everything lined up for this launching pad, and it has gone backwards rather than forwards.
It's that stupid, dumb stadium, and it's still the same owner with two teams.
Yeah.
And you know, it looks Bush League, and Toronto is a city. Its vanity is such that it can't look Bush League. Everything has to look the latest, hottest, grooviest. And when you have your football team there and it's owned by a guy who also owns the BC team, they don't like that. Because they're like Charlie the Tuna. Remember the ads for Charlie the Tuna? Charlie, we want tunas that taste good, not tunas with good taste. Toronto wants the tuna with good taste. Now, and you've got to address that in that market. But I still think it's solvable. You only need 28,000 to 30,000 people in the right venue. Look at what the soccer did. You couldn't, in the old days, you couldn't do crickets in soccer in Toronto.
Oh, I know.
But BMO Field changed that. And the right field will change it. They've screwed up U of T. They were supposed to put a team at Varsity Stadium. They're supposed to put a team up at York University. Mm-hmm. They talked about Mississauga everywhere. They've screwed this up so many ways to Sunday.
So, Bruce, let me ask you this. Because
why am I agitated?
Well, no, I mean, 10, 15 years ago, I was one of these guys and a little wet behind the ears going, just get rid of Toronto. Just get rid of, you know, the Prairie teams will carry it, these, whatever, don't need Toronto. But as I matured a little bit and saw it for what it is, there's a necessity, isn't there, of having a team in Toronto? I don't mean...
Ask the people who run the evil empire of TSN whether they want a Toronto team, whether Hamilton would suffice.
Right.
This isn't like the NFL without L.A. It ain't the same. Ask all the guys who sell the sponsorships for the CFL. And again, Rob, you know this.
Yeah.
People don't go to the games, but you look at the TV ratings, and there's a lot of people in Southern Ontario who still religiously watch the Argos. They won't go to the games.
Right.
So it tells me that there's some residual goodwill for them if you can put the situation in the right area.
And
the other reason is, too, not to interrupt, but the other reason is I know how much it matters here. And I know how much people care here and in Saskatchewan and Winnipeg. And for this league to get messed up and maybe be fundamentally ruined by the Toronto situation would be a crime.
So is the disproportionate investment by the fan base? I mean, you can make a case that nobody in this league is invested like they are in Regina, in Saskatchewan.
They are.
Not even here in Calgary. Right. But here in Calgary, up in Edmonton, much greater investment than there is in...
It matters.
Right. BC, you know, you can... It's up, it's down. It's like a graph, isn't it?
But it's still a part of the culture there.
But is there a league that has these wild swings in buy-in?
Sometimes in baseball. I mean, you get a city like Atlanta in baseball, which has been a fantastic franchise, which wins regularly, et cetera, and they still have trouble drawing. So you get these cultural things in certain parts of the country. I mean, Atlanta is the heart of college football area, et cetera, and so it's hard for them to make inroads to the baseball guys. But this has just been – this is on Cohan's plate to get this solved. But the tan and the nice clothes and the specious kind of stuff he comes out with about this is the greatest it's ever been. Hey, job one, get it solved. Get it solved. Find an owner. Get the MLSC people a deal that they can accept and move on.
So you don't buy that because my belief is, and I have no reason not to believe this, that hasn't been the job – the top priority in this league for 5 or 6 years now, maybe even longer than that.
Yeah.
And it hasn't come to fruition. And you said earlier, you still believe there is...
Well, here's the analogy, Rob.
Okay, give it to me.
If we had a GM in Calgary who'd been here for 5 years, and he hadn't solved the goaltending issue, even though every year he tried to solve it, would we be sitting here saying, well, you know, he tried? Of course not. We'd have him up there, be roasting him.
It's interesting. I mean, he did what all good commissioners in sport do, which is satisfy his owners and labor, right? He got the labor deal done.
Braley and Wettenhall, and I would say Bob Young, those are the guys that he has to be on his antennae be out for. Not that he takes the Calgary guys for granted, the Flames and those people in Saskatchewan for granted, but those are the guys who I think he has to be really on the alert for.
And all of them owners of Eastern Division teams, which we started off this conversation by saying there is a huge disproportionate caliber, quality, enjoyment factor, whatever. It just looks like the East is lagging behind yet again.
And Toronto will change all of that if you get the stadium and you get the look of the thing better. Hmm. Hamilton, you know, God help them, they got to get into that stadium, but I think that can be repaired. But the Toronto thing has just got to be done.
Well, I guess the one thing you would say...
The sticking point is supposedly Braley, to sell the Argonauts, wants a piece of future Grey Cups. And any new owner...
I'm sorry, what?
He says to sell the Argonauts, he wants a piece of any future Grey Cups that the Argos host.
In Toronto?
Yeah. Oh, you hadn't heard this. Yeah, this is one of the sticking points in the sale. Supposedly. Reportedly. Allegedly. And, yeah, you can see why a new buyer is going like, that ain't happening. That's our gravy. Once every 8 years, our Christmas, or 9 years. Yeah. That's our gravy. Well, anyhow, that seems to be one of the sticking points. So it's up to Cohan to tell Braley or find a way to make Braley happy. He wants $10 million, according to rumors, which is nice, because I want a Ferrari for Christmas.
Sure.
And he wants a piece of these future Grey Cups. And MLSC, who said, we'll do this as a... In the sense of the Flames buying the Stamps, we'll do this as a kind of a community thing. But we were born at night, but not last night.
Wow. Never dull. It is never, ever dull. We'll take a break when we come
back. That's our league.
Later on, do want to definitely talk about the Battle of Alberta, the importance of this one. We'll leave the league as a whole, but we'll take a look at Alberta. But also the importance of what we just saw at the Open and leading into the Canadian Open and Tiger, and where his relevancy still fits in the grand scheme of things. More with Bruce Dobian when we come back. Sportsnet 960, The Fan.
Sportsnet 960. Talking sports all the time. No radio? No problem. Download the Rogers Radio app and never be without Sportsnet 960 again. Sportsnet 960. The Fan. Talking sports in the afternoon. This is The Big Show on Sportsnet 960. The Fan.
All I know is that I've won my third major championship, and I'm, you know, three legs, you know, out of the four towards a career Grand Slam at 25, so I'm feeling pretty good right now.
Rory McIlroy feeling really good, and rightfully so. Put himself in a really good spot this past weekend at the Open. Tiger Woods was the story after day one because Tiger Woods was in it, but then it became McIlroy's story for the rest of the tournament. At least that's legitimately what, you know, was going on in that tournament. But it's everywhere else, Bruce. And I heard you talking about this in the 1 o'clock hour, and it was a point that I made last week is, you know, I respect that there's a certain group of diehard fans in golf that could care less where Tiger finishes. Yeah. Just, you know, really happy for Rory. And, you know, Rory won away from a career Grand Slam, and that he should be, you know, he should be lauded for that and, yeah, and really should be held up on a pedestal as one of the great young golfers. But in its entirety, golf, the rest of the world, that is the difference between just treading water and golf being significant and important again,
right,
are really missing Tiger right now. Television numbers show that. I mean, something that's played at a different and on a different, yeah, continent probably won't reflect it, but we saw the first two majors this year, terrible, terrible ratings without a Tiger in the field, that so to speak.
Well, not terrible ratings. Ratings like they were before Tiger came on the scene.
Okay.
They changed our expectations
fair,
of ratings.
Fair, yeah, enough, yeah.
So it's hard to believe. I tweeted out after he made the cut by one strike. He was right on the cut number on Friday, and I,
yep,
tweeted out, said, well, the ESPN officials, network guys, are now taking the bullet out of the chamber. And somebody said, oh, come on, he's going to be playing early in the morning and nobody's going to care. I said, he matters. He still matters.
He does.
That he's there to talk about. We can show his highlight pack. We can show him succeeding or failing. You and I have had epic battles over parity and what matters,
yep,
and what doesn't matter.
Yep.
And the thing I love about a sport like golf, or maybe tennis too, but a sport like golf, is that, you know, what are you going to do to Rory? You can't enforce parity. You can't put a salary cap to make him play less well. You know, once in a while, you like to see great players play. And
right,
that's what Tiger was. Tiger was the standard. And the other thing about him is I really admire him, that for all these years, he's still a hard ass. He still plays the hard ass publicly.
Mm-hmm.
Like even Robert De Niro eventually went to comedy.
Yep.
But he still plays the hard ass.
Yep.
And golf needs that personality, needs that greatness. And Rory's kind of approaching it, which is good. And you never want to see that change. And what we've had up until now on the golf tour, to me, is a lot like an NBA or NHL league with parity.
Right.
He could win. He could win. He could win. Anyone could win. Well, it's nice, and there's good stories to all of them. But something in the human nature is we like to see greatness once in a while, too.
Yeah. Well, and let me ask you about Rory. Where does he deserve to be slotted in? You know, it's hard to say, well, before Tiger, but you can't really do that because,
yeah,
you know, when Tiger came, technology was changing, you know, the kind of the stratification of sports changed, all sports stations, all of those things.
Yeah.
Tiger's been around for a while.
And he changed, and you can see it in Rory.
Yeah.
He changed the fitness, the athleticism of golf.
Right.
Golfers.
I
mean, Rory McIlroy, if there hadn't been a Tiger to change it, Rory would be a little bit pudgy. He'd be throwing back a few brewskis, and he'd have a little bit of a tire because that's the way the guys used to be.
Mm-hmm.
And so all of that was changed by Tiger. The statistic is only three guys have won three majors before the age of 25. Obviously, Rory,
yep,
Tiger, and the third one, of course, some guy named Nicholas.
Who?
Yeah. So that's, you know, blonde guy.
Yeah, I remember. Okay.
Blonde guy.
Yeah.
DeBert. He's in some rarefied company at this point in his career.
Can he move the needle like Tiger?
Well, that's the question. You hate to see this because you hate to say this, but you know Tiger and all of his domestic stuff played into his popularity. And Rory became more interesting and popular when he and Wozniacki which one is he with?
Yeah, Wozniacki. Yeah,
he was the one with the eye. The Canadian girl is the one with no eye.
That's okay. Louis LeBlanc's girlfriend.
Yes. Where's he playing these days?
Anaheim.
Exactly.
Well, wherever Anaheim has an AHL.
Anyhow, all that stuff plays into it.
Yeah.
It becomes, you know, part of the legend. And as I said earlier, it, you know, if dumping your girlfriend is this good, I mean, eHarmony is going to take a real shot in the shorts.
Well, I won't say one is connected to the other. Because we got into this whole conversation.
We're both married guys. What would we know?
What would we know? I got into this conversation with Pat last week about kind of the importance of generational players.
Yeah.
You know, the superstar athlete. You know, do they have as much importance now with, you know, with the constant critiquing and the constant second guessing and the over analysis and all of this? And I think they do. I mean, you look at, you know, the NBA's had a pretty positive summer, I would suggest, being not playing games but getting publicity because of LeBron James, right? It moves the needle. And it was just interesting watching the fact that, okay, Tiger's first major. Oh, good, he stayed in. And everybody was, you know, it gave golf a little bit of a kick that way. And I almost feel for Rory because what you just said, he is in rarefied air. Yeah. But do we look at Rory McIlroy as a generational player? Do we look at him
Could be. See, I'm old enough to remember when Jack Nicklaus was a bad guy because he started to supersede Arnold Palmer.
Right.
And there was a white hat, black hat thing there
absolutely.
For several years.
Absolutely.
And in fact, Jack was not much of a beloved guy for a while. It took him a while to become a beloved generational guy.
Yeah.
And so it's impossible for us to know whether we'll see Rory that way going forward. But he certainly has set the table for it. I sure wish he'd come and play in Canada at the Open. It's never going to do that because it's always this stupid thing where they have to take the flight and all that.
Yeah.
But he's got a chance to be that generational guy. And there's other things going on in his life which might make him an interesting guy culturally away from it. Tiger had everything going. He was a black player. He was fit. He kicked everybody's ass. He played the hard-ass guy, etc. Rory is starting to form a personality here, and we'll see where he takes it.
Do we fully appreciate exactly how much Tiger did for the sport in the sense of, you know, I was thinking about he brought Nike to golf, right?
Yep.
You know, they followed him. He brought a lot of eyeballs. He brought I think coincidentally he just happened to be in an era which, you know, created all these new television channels, but I can't help but think the Golf Channel certainly benefited from him.
Yep.
That there's been a lot of spinoff. I just don't know if McIlroy does.
The interesting thing about Tiger to me. And I saw stats on this recently. Of course, one of the things his significance was supposed to be bringing minorities to the game, in particular African Americans. Hasn't really happened. Hasn't really happened. The TV numbers, however, a lot of women are watching Tiger Woods just to hate him or just to see him as a person in the pop culture thing, the way they watch the Kardashians, etc.
Yeah.
So it's more women who are watching TV to see what Tiger's doing than any of the groups that we thought were going to benefit golf. So it's the law of unintended consequences, right?
Does McIlroy get the Grand Slam? Does he get all four?
Oh, absolutely. And the way Augusta sets up, his game is good for it. His game is
and that's all he's missing right now.
Yeah, it's Augusta.
It's Augusta. Okay.
And again, he's 25. If he plays till 45, he's got 20 more years to do it. The question will be how many of each one does he get? Can he stay healthy? Does he break down the way Tiger did? I mean, that's the other thing about Tiger is, you know, he's played with pain. He's played through it. And you got to give him credit for that.
As a golf guy, did Tiger break down or did he get fidgety with the swing?
Well, it depends on who you listen to. He certainly got fidgety and all those health things. The other question is, some people think that he hurt himself doing Navy SEAL training because his dad, of course, was a special ops guy, and the Tiger has always wanted to sort of emulate his father. Some people think that's how he hurt his knee, and he never told anybody. He used to go off and do like Navy SEAL type training, and he hurt his knee doing that. So it depends who you listen to.
Well,
mightn't have been a golf swing at all.
It was a great weekend for Rory McIlroy and a great weekend for Rory McIlroy's dad.
Yeah,
he cashed in.
He made the dough. Yeah, it wasn't bad, and it's like Wimbledon. It's interesting the effect that a tournament that you wake up and watch first thing in the day has on you, as opposed to something you sit around for and watch at supper time. Everybody's wide open in the morning, except the golfers who go up. But it's a highly visible event, and I like it. It's fun to watch.
Coming up in the 3 o'clock hour, want to dive into the meaningful Battle of Alberta, which will be Thursday up at Commonwealth Stadium. But when we come back, it is ARB season in the NHL. We'll talk a little bit about what transpired today and take a look ahead because the ugly one, the messy one, O'Reilly and the Avalanche is sitting in the weeds, headed our way. It's Sportsnet 960, The Fan.
Sportsnet 960, The Fan, covering the world's fastest game. Home for the Calgary Flames and the National Hockey League.